Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He's joining us on the River Islands guest line. Hi, Greg. How are you today?
Gentlemen, what's happening?
We are doing great. We are doing better than the football team we talk about. That's for sure. I tell you what, we got a lot of stuff. Now, we've been talking. We've kind of been doing a Greg Cosellis type of a show so far the first hour and a half.
I don't know what that means. I'll have to share.
I'll tell you. Like, it's a lot of DVOA and this ranking and that ranking.
I don't do that. I watch the tape. I don't know what all those numbers
mean.
Well,
but that's where you find that stuff is on the tape, Greg. That's where it is. It's all tucked in there like a cake. You know what I mean? It's in there. So here's one that we talked about yesterday, and I would love to get your reaction to whether this is circumstantial or if something was actually happening. In the first 8 games of the year, Brock Purdy attempted 29 throws of 20 yards or more, 3.6 per game in the first 8 games. The last 2 weeks, Greg, he has not attempted one. What are you seeing? Are you seeing defenses take that away? The receivers, what are you seeing with regard to downfield throws in recent weeks?
Yeah, I think in this game in particular, last week, he did not see the field very well. There were throws to be made that he left on the field that were downfield throws. And I can't tell you why that he's not seeing it, but he has not been as decisive. There were specific plays that I made note of as I watched the tape where the route concept was there, the read was clean, and for whatever reason, he just didn't process it the right way, and he ended up not throwing balls that he should throw. So he did not play very well this week. And the number you just gave this past week was predominantly on him. He just did not see it the way he needed to see it.
What sort of a pocket are you seeing him on film have? Because I'm watching Greg, and you know, I watch it 2 and 3 times, and I'm seeing a quarterback who doesn't have a lot of a comfort zone back there.
No, but a lot of that is also on him because he's also leaving clean pockets a little bit too often. See, one of the things, and we talked about this earlier in the season, and one of the things that really stood out about his last year was two things really stood out. Number one, his ability to throw with unbelievable timing and anticipation. And that's one reason there were more downfield throws. And number two, his ability to recognize coverage rotation instantaneously and know exactly where to go with the football. Those two things are not happening with the same level of decisiveness and consistency as they happened a year ago. Certainly not in recent weeks. He's had a stretch here probably for a month or so where he just, to me, watching tape, has not been particularly comfortable. He's leaving the pocket too early. He's not seeing it with the clarity that we expect him to based on what he had done in his past. So he just doesn't look like a comfortable player right now.
So this is interesting because there's actually a clip of Kyle Shanahan just today, and I get it, he's the guy's coach, but he says that there's no difference between the way Brock Purdy is performing last year versus this year. Would you agree with that based on what you're seeing on tape?
Well, first of all, I'd be truly, truly surprised if Kyle truly meant that. You know, he's giving a press conference.
Right.
So he knows. Believe me, he knows. But first of all, he's doing the right thing. You don't throw your quarterback under the bus and say he's playing poorly. You don't say that. So that doesn't mean anything to me, and it shouldn't mean anything to you guys.
No, so I guess...
So the tape tells you what you need to know.
And you would describe that as what?
Just what I said.
Brock Purdy is not playing anywhere near as well this year. Is that kind of what...
I mean, I'll give you an example. On their first third quarter possession... Okay, he threw to McCaffrey for 6 yards on 3rd and 15. It was just outside the red zone, so they ended up kicking a field goal. I don't know if you remember the specific play.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that was a great example of Purdy just not seeing the game with the same innate, refined, nuanced feel of timing and anticipation that we've come to expect. He had 2 throws there. He had a seam route to Samuel, and he had Jennings on the high-low with McCaffrey that he would have made last season without even thinking. So instead, he threw a check down to McCaffrey for 6 yards, and he threw it too quick. It was a clean pocket. He just got rid of it quick. And then they kick a field goal instead of perhaps getting a touchdown. There was another case, and see, some of these occur when there's completions. So you don't think of them as, oh, maybe he didn't see it the right way. Because some of them are completions, but there were too many dropbacks in this game in which, to me, and I've been watching the Niners, you know, for years and years and years, as you guys know, in which I do not believe, and again, you know, I'm not talking to Kyle, obviously, but where I believe he just did not process the route concept versus the coverage in the way that he needed to and with the necessary clarity.
And I'm actually fascinated by the play before the one you referenced, 2nd and 19, where Purdy scrambles for 4 and he had McCaffrey open. So to me, that's another incident of him being a little tentative. And I wanted to ask you about the throw 2nd and 11 that Debo was open on play action. And if they convert that, they probably move the chains and keep the ball. What did you see from the film as far as Brock and that throw?
You're talking about the one late in the game?
Right. The one he airmailed Debo by about 4 yards.
There's nothing to say there other than he threw it inaccurately. I mean, that was the play. If he put it between the numbers, it's a completion. He just airmailed it. I mean, that one is not a function of not seeing it. Or that was the play, and he threw it to the right guy, and he just airmailed it. I mean, I can't, you know, those things happen. You don't want it to happen there, but it happened. That was just a bad throw.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films, with us every single week on Willard and Dibbs, 95.7 The Game. Greg, let's talk Debo Samuel for a bit. The fan base has really been frustrated on the plays that they've come accustomed to see really work, and this year they're not as much. Do you see that as a schematic thing? Has Debo maybe lost a step? What do you see with his game?
Well, I think when your quarterback's not playing at the same level, your receivers end up not getting the same number of targets. And because when fans watch a game, they can't see the route, so they automatically assume, because he's not getting the ball, that the receivers are not playing as well. And that's not really the case. Most of the time when a passing game is not working, it's more on the quarterback. But I will say that Seattle played, I think, I would guess, I don't know this for a fact, I would guess they played more man coverage than the 49ers might have anticipated going into the game based on what they'd seen on tape from the Seahawks prior. And I thought at times all the receivers struggled to separate and create, you know, cleaner throws. But when it's man, you still have to deliver the football. You know, it's just the way it is, because otherwise you're not going to make any throws. But I don't think that that Debo Samuel's a problem. I think that the pass game as a whole, which starts with Purdy, has been a little bit of an issue.
What are you seeing from the jet sweeps? Not only this game where Debo had 2, one of them called back because of a penalty. I'm seeing ineffectiveness now. Is that because of just the overall execution of the play, or have defenses caught on to some of the stuff that Kyle likes to do?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because, you know, when I watch these plays and I see guys get beat on blocks, I don't think that that means that the defense has caught on. I think it means that guys don't make their blocks. I don't think the O-line played particularly well in this game. I thought there were a number of poor snaps by the center, by the left guard Banks. You know, again, I'm just watching the tape, so that's all I can tell you. You know, I'm just wondering if Father Time has caught up to Trent Williams a little bit. I don't know if he's playing at the same consistent elite level that has defined his career. And he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, as he should be. But I spoke with someone else, you know, from the league who watches a ton of tape and kind of agreed that it just might be the beginning of Father Time catching up with him.
Okay, that's interesting. I think we'd love to hear more about that. Like
Well, there's nothing more to say.
But what do you see? Yeah. What do you see that sort of has you thinking that?
Well, I think in pass pro, he's not been quite as powerful with his anchor. There are a couple times he just gets not beat, you know, not where you go, oh my God, he's just getting beat, but where he's just getting pushed back a little bit too much into the pocket, which never, you know, would happen. I think even in the run game, there's been a couple of times where, you know, he just didn't quite make the block with, you know, kind of the definition that we've come to expect. Just little things. Like I said, it's not like you watch him and go, oh my God, this guy can't play. It's just, you know, little things that start to show. And, you know, is he 35? Is that how old he is?
I think he's even older.
Yeah, might be 36.
Older,
yeah.
Older than that. Yeah. Yeah, here, I'll
I mean,
it up.
You know, eventually it happens. I mean, you know, and again, I'm not going to sit here and say that it has happened. I'm just wondering, you know, this is not a definitive statement. I'm not saying it as a mathematical equation. I just notice on tape that, you know, you used to watch the Niners. It's this way with the Eagles, with Lane Johnson. Like with Lane Johnson, when you watch the Eagles and he's their right tackle, you watch tape and it's just like, you know, you never even notice Lane Johnson. That was the way it was with Trent Williams. It was like, oh my God, whoever he's blocking is just irrelevant. It's just, that's the way it is. But now it's just a little bit here and there.
Trent turned 36 in July.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of the ways that shows up, Greg, is when he lines up in an illegal formation, maybe because he knows he's a step slow and he's starting to maybe cheat on it. I won't ask you to comment on that because you can't judge his mindset, of course. Yeah. But I just was fascinated by that penalty from a veteran who knows how to line up. I want to ask you about the touchdown to Juwan Jennings. They go play action, and I want to say it was...
I was just going to say, I did think it was interesting that with Kittle out, that they played 12 snaps with six O-linemen and they played Jalen Moore. That to be honest, I didn't expect that. So, when I saw it, I was like, oh, that's interesting.
And how did that work for him? Because I also was kind of interested. They had two other tight ends up and they only were special teamers. And so they opted for a third tackle instead. What did you see on the film from those?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember any, you know, major plays, in other words, it didn't seem like it was a big factor, watching the tape, but they obviously thought that was the best way to go. And those are the kinds of thing, guys, just so you know, I don't comment on that in terms of whether it's good or bad, because they go through a whole week of preparation. We're not in the meetings. We're not in the process of preparation. So clearly this is what they thought was best. And, you know, I think when you have a coaching staff and a head coach that's been in a number of championship games and two Super Bowls, you got to kind of accept the fact that maybe they know a little more than you and I.
Greg, I'm wondering this. The data suggests that the Niners are still moving the ball pretty well until they get to the 20-yard line, and then things are really jamming up when it comes to the red zone, and they were so good at it last year. What are you seeing with the Niners inside the 20?
Yeah, well, that's where we hope that McCaffrey becomes a factor, because obviously that's where he was a big factor a year ago. And that changes the way defenses play. So that's what we're hoping, you know, as he continues to get his kind of feet wet and, you know, gains, you know, a little more just for the feel of the games. Because I don't think he looks badly. I just think it's a matter of, you know, getting acclimated to playing, you know, an NFL game. So that's what the hope is, because, you know, teams that can run the ball, particularly in the low red zone, you know, that really helps. That's how you score touchdowns, because the passing game is hard. The passing game becomes schematic. Like the touchdown at Jennings, which you mentioned,
right.
That's a schematic play. And it worked really, really well. But you have to run a lot of schematic stuff because there's just not a lot of space.
And it's part of that scheme in that moment, having Christian McCaffrey out there, so the play action becomes much more of a viable threat.
Well, it can. I mean, you know, But you know, it depends on what your play call is. Like on that Jennings touchdown, Jennings was in a wing alignment, and he showed blocking. And they were playing man-to-man, Seattle, and Love, who, by the way, had a really good game. They played a ton of what we call big nickel with three safeties. I almost felt like in this game, Mike McDonald deployed Love in the way he deployed Kyle Hamilton with the Ravens. They're not exactly the same player, obviously, but I thought that, there was an element of that to the way in which he deployed Love playing with their three safety personnel. But so Jennings blocked. So Love put his eyes in the backfield thinking it was a run play. And then, you know, Purdy did the play action boot left, and Jennings just leaked out, and Love was stuck inside. So that's a schemed play from 3 yards out. You know, who knows? Maybe because it's second and goal, you know, a year ago, they probably hand that off to McCaffrey.
Greg Cosell with us, Willard and Dibbs, NFL Films. Greg, if you noticed, and this is kind of like reflective of the fan base, I think, right now, we've had this entire conversation solely about the Niners offense. Let's go to the defensive side of the football, and this probably won't surprise you. I know that, you know, we've talked about Nick Bosa a lot, but when he left the game, the numbers suddenly got way, way better for Seattle, and there is the thought that he might miss this coming game. So what are your thoughts on the 49ers on film and how that pass rush looks without Nick Bosa?
Well, I think I've told you guys over our conversations that it's not so much the number of sacks, it's how offenses treat guys who are big-time pass rushers. And it was evident that the Seahawks were not going to let Bosa wreck their pass game with one-on-one matchups versus either right tackle, Lucas or Gerald, whoever was playing, because they deployed multiple concepts to limit his edge rush throughout the game. That was clearly their game plan. So when he went out, things changed dramatically. You know, again, I'm not making a judgment here. People can if they want. This team does not blitz. They only had 1 5-man pressure in the entire game, okay? And that came late on the final touchdown drive by the Seahawks. Every other pass rush was a 4-man pressure.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And that's the way they've essentially been all year. They have the lowest blitz rate of any team in the league. So that's the way they've chosen to play. Now, one can sit here and debate, you know, oh, well, they need to do a little more blitzing. You know, you can debate that. And maybe they'll do that, particularly if Bosa is out. We'll see. But that's the way they have played pretty much all season. And when he went out, clearly things changed.
When you look at the secondary and their performance, I was trying to watch the tape and just see if there was ever a snap where they were coming up and playing press. What do you see from these corners, Greg? Because I see a team that likes to play 6 or 7 yards off almost all the time.
Yeah, that's kind of the way they play. They're not a heavy press man team. I don't know. Again, that could change too, because as we've discussed, Renardo Green, when he, you know, he's the rookie who plays now at left corner. It'll be interesting when Ward comes back, what they do. But anyway, the point is that Green, in 2 years at Florida State, was a heavy press man corner, because that's the way Florida State played. They were a heavy press man defense. So that's Green's background and his experience. So they play that every once in a while, but that's not really foundationally how they play with their corners.
What would you say is the challenge with that group going against Jordan Love? Incredibly talented, in and out of the lineup with injuries this year. Has a lot of turnovers, a lot of interceptions in just eight games. Like, what have you seen from him on film this year that will challenge the Niner defense?
Well, they're pretty complete offense because they run the ball really well. Josh Jacobs is a really good back. He's got a physical presence to him. He's got short area burst. He's just a really good back. And the run game is pretty much their starting point. Love is incredibly gifted. He's probably, in terms of pure physical gifts, top five in the league. But he can be a little reckless. He can be a little undisciplined. But he's very aggressive. That's his mindset, and that's the way it plays out. So he's going to turn it loose. So you have to be aware of that. He's not a check down guy. And when I say that, I don't mean he never checks it down, but I mean he's going to turn it loose. You know, he's not risk averse, let's put it that way. So, you know, he will push the ball down the field, and they will call plays to do that. He's got a big arm. Like I said, he's really gifted, and he's big. He's 6'4", 220. So you're dealing with a very, very physically and athletically gifted player who's very aggressive in the way he sees the game.
How do they go about inflicting damage in the pass game from what you've seen on film? They have a lot of different weapons. Do they play mostly 11 personnel with the three wide receivers? How do they go about it, Greg?
They'll play a good amount of 12, but Jaden Reed is the most interesting guy because they are a heavy motion team in many ways, like the Niners, and Jaden Reed is their predominant motion player. So they do a lot of things with multiple motions with him. And by the way, when you go in motion, it's not just the pass game. A lot of times when you go in motion with someone crossing the formation, maybe returning, is you're trying to move second-level defenders, and what that does is it impacts run support. So you have to have a plan for all that going in. Are you going to react to it? Are you just going to let it happen? You know, you have to have a plan. That's part of an overall structure of a defense. But the point I'm making is it's not just in the pass game in which they deploy motion with Reed. And Reed will end up lining up all over. So you have to be aware of where he is. He will be offset in the backfield a number of times in the game.
Greg, I want to go back to your comment about the Niners in the red zone and hoping that Christian McCaffrey's presence will now get that going. There's something interesting that we found. Maybe you'll debunk this as just coincidental. But the Dolphins with McDaniel, the Rams with McVay, the Niners with Shanahan, and the Packers with LaFleur, all disciples, right, running similar systems. They're all in the bottom third in the league in red zone efficiency right now. Is that, in your mind, coincidental, or is there something that the league is really, like, you know, like catching up to?
I would say that you'd have to look at a much larger sample size because all those guys have been coaching for a long time. So, you know, that's a hard question to answer because you'd have to go back and look. You know, McVay's been a head coach for a long time. LaFleur's been a head coach in Green Bay for a long time. If this is the first time it's happening, you know, I can't give you an answer, but if it's the first time it's happening, my sense would be that it's probably more coincidental, but I don't know that. So, but you'd have to do a much larger sample size than this year.
Got it.
Yeah, perhaps it's personnel-based, too. When you don't
it
have McCaffrey for a long time, and then you miss Kittle, you're going to probably be a little worse in the red zone.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and don't forget, the Rams were without Kupp and Nacua
for
most of the season. Yeah, I mean, I can just see over these last number of years when Kupp was healthy how many times he caught red zone touchdowns within 10 yards.
And the Dolphins have been without their quarterback a lot, and the Packers have been without their quarterback
the
a lot.
In a sense, you've answered your own question.
Well, thank you for helping us do that, Greg. Hey, as always, great stuff. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, I love talking with you guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Greg.
Hey, Greg Cosell, NFL Films.